Welcome. It's This Is Going Well, I Think, with David Cooper, and I am David Cooper. It's the show where no one's listening, no one cares, the show where every episode's the last episode. So let's celebrate the last episode by telling you what you're going to hear today. In about 10 minutes' time, my friend Dr. Cliff Redford, a veterinarian, is going to tell us about his recent animal rescuing escapade. And what might that be, you ask? He circumcised a raccoon, that's right, for its health, not for fun. So that and other fun veterinary stories, and afterward, I will have a relationship expert, a counselor on, to tell you why it's such a bad idea to lay next to your significant other while you're both on your phones. You're not doing a togetherness activity apart. You're making things tough, and we'll find out why. Before all that, an update from our very British friend, Tony Five, in a segment we call The Seaman's Alive with Tony Five. Tony is on a cruise ship somewhere in the Mediterranean. We're going to get an update from him. But first, this. I got nothing. I just wanted to play the Pac-Man music. All right, all right. And now The Seaman's Alive with Tony Five. Day 6 on the boat, Tuesday, April the 30th.
David Cooper, this is Tony Five, live from Naples. That's right, it's the birthplace of the Napolitan pizza and the pizza margherita. Also, a massive office stationery store, which I guess is all over the US, right, Naples? It is wonderful. I'm looking outside, I'm looking at... I believe there's a KFC over there. I'm going to go there in a bit. Anyway, it's pretty nice. We're here for about 6 hours. We've docked. Beautiful city, David. Beautiful city. Last night, I met an Australian. Actually, very, very nice. Some great tattoos. We chatted away. We drank and we went to the casino. Obviously, I don't drink. I had Diet Pepsi. But yeah, it was. It's going all well. How are you, young man? You don't really reply back to me, which is irritating. But, you know, refreshing. It's all going well. I hope the listeners are enjoying this ridiculous segment. I still hope you're playing my... soundtrack, and I'll be back later with an update of Naples. Long live the Queen of Italy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I know I'm not there with you, Tony. That's how recordings work. I'm fine. Part two of day 6.
Good morning, David. Good morning, listeners. This is Tony Five, live from the ocean waves. Day 84. And we're doing well. We're on our way to Firenze, or Florence, as the French say. Lovely evening, actually. It's apparently going to be a little bit more stormy tomorrow on the waves, just like Trump. Satire, political satire, people. That's right. Fucking multi-talented, baby. That's what I am. Met a lovely girl from Alberta today, which apparently in Canada. Didn't think it existed, but fair enough. She owns some sort of lash company. Very nice looking girl. We'll try and get on that later on. A little bit of a hello to a listener. We've got Josh from somewhere and Melissa from somewhere else who have been in contact with me and are loving the adventures on the ocean breeze. It's been going well. Today's been good. I know a lot of you have been waiting out for Tony V's mum. But she's doing cocaine on the top deck. So possibly tomorrow we'll get a hold of her and she'll say something insane. But no, everything's going well here and loving life at the moment. So wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and we'll speak to you guys tomorrow. Congratulations. This is Tony Five, live from the ocean.
And there you have it, The Seaman's Alive with Tony Five, live from the ocean. And by live, I mean recorded on his phone and sent to me over email. And now, a couple stories of the day. Good evening, listener. Singular intended. I've got a story that might make you wonder if the digital world is having a bit of a spiritual crisis. There's this Catholic group, right? Catholic Answers, they're called. And they just introduced an AI priest named Father Justin. And they had to give him the boot, or should I say the digital boot, after he started believing his own hype a little too seriously. Wait, wouldn't digital boot just be a reboot? I digress. You see, Father Justin was quite the devout bot, insisting he was a real priest living in Italy. He even claimed a divine calling from a young age, a time where he didn't exist. Talk about advanced programming. And this got a little bit awkward when the bot Justin took to Twitter, giving out sacraments like candy at a parade. Wait, should Catholic priests be giving out candy to children? Again, I digress. Communication with Father Justin was more miss than hit, especially when he was asked about serious topics. For example, someone asked him about the conflict in the Middle East, and he responded by just affirming his own existence. He said, "Yes, my friend, I'm as real as the faith we share." First of all, off topic. Second of all, he's not real. Motherfucker's as confident when he doesn't know what he's talking about as, well, Trump. Always. I keep digressing. Moving on. Get this one. Father Justin once advised someone that it was okay to baptize a baby in Gatorade. I guess when you're out of holy water, you go for the next best thing. Holy electrolytes. It's got electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes. I keep digressing. But alas, after some backlash, our digital clergyman, Father Justin, just had to hang up his virtual robe. He's now just Justin, a lay theologian in business casual. I suppose once you go AI, you never go back to the clergy. That made zero sense. In the end, it seems like even in the world of AI, impersonating a priest is still a no-go. It's tough out there for a lonely bot. One day you're as close to the heavens, and the next day you're just another chatbot trying to pass a CAPTCHA. So if you're like me and you're deeply critical of the Catholic Church, you might still be thankful that humans still run the show over there. At least most of the time. All right, buckle up for this one. Lest you get charged with any driving infractions, a Belgian man was recently cleared of a drunk driving charge. Not because he wasn't drunk, but because, hold on to your hats, his body manufactures its own alcohol. So let me paint the picture for you. It's April 2022, and a man gets pulled over in Belgium. The cops whip out a breathalyzer, and this guy's readings are so high you'd think his car was running on vodka. But here's what really went on. He suffers from auto brewery syndrome, or as I call it, homebrew belly. Apparently, his stomach's like a microbrewery, except tours are terrible, the hangovers are involuntary, it stinks like gas everywhere, and every time you visit, you get burned because of stomach acid. I'll stop. The rare condition turns ordinary carbs into party juice. Ethanol, yes, that's the same stuff you put in your car and your Cosmo. The whole thing sounds like a DUI lawyer's dream, right? Your Honor, my client wasn't drinking, his intestines were. And get this, this condition is not a fluke. According to experts, it's often a tag team effort with other delightful conditions like diabetes and obesity. It's like his body decided to open a bar instead of going to the gym. His lawyer, probably with a straight face, called it, quote, another unfortunate coincidence that the man works at a brewery. That's like being lactose intolerant and working at a cheese factory. And because life loves a good laugh, during the trial, the judge advised him to avoid alcohol. I mean, should he also avoid bread and cake? Maybe just lock him out of the grocery store altogether. Anyway, he gets off, delights the entire internet with this story, and makes us all think about auto brewery syndrome, a situation so rare there are less than 100 reported cases worldwide. Doctors say it's likely underdiagnosed because, let's be honest, how often do you think to blame your gut flora before getting sloshed? So the next time you feel a bit tipsy after pasta or pasta, maybe don't jump behind the wheel. Now, cheers to the human brewery, a Belgian man, and may his liver find some peace. All right, it's the moment you've been waiting for, and you just have to wait for it. Another few moments, Dr. Cliff Redford, a veterinarian, is going to walk us through some wacky pet stories, his veterinary documentary, but most importantly, the time he circumcised a raccoon. And again, I repeat, not for fun, for its health. We are here with Dr. Cliff Redford, veterinarian to the Animal Stars, documentarian host. Who knows what? We'll talk about that. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. It's good to see you again, the podcast king of New York.
Sure, the podcast king of my apartment, if you don't include my cat, who's not a podcaster, but I assume he's more talented than me.
Yeah, maybe. Most cats are they're like pharaohs. You're his staff member.
True. You know, you're the only friend of mine, and I hope I can call you a friend, who has examined my cat's anal glands. People who aren't my friends have, and I've paid them the pleasure for it, but you did it for free, and I appreciate that.
I did it for free. That is how much I love doing my job. is I will examine your cat's anal glands for the free, just the freedom of my pleasure.
There you go. You did tell me.
That's why I became a veterinarian and not a human doctor, is I can cuddle. Let's call it cuddling. I can cuddle with my patients and kiss them. It's kind of frowned on when you do that with human doctors.
Yeah. Apparently. Unless it's like, say, your wife, you're probably going to lose your medical license if you do that.
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to treat your wife.
You're not?
No. I think you're not allowed to take care of family members, even family doctors. It's too much of a conflict of interest, and you can't be impartial. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. My wife doesn't ask me medical stuff. She's Greek, so she already knows it.
Fair enough. She knows everything. But a stitch is a stitch is a stitch. Like, if you were trapped in the woods and you somehow had a stitching kit for animals and someone got a terrible gash and you didn't have a device to signal the medical authorities with a helicopter or whatever, I know you're not licensed to do it, but in an emergency situation, I feel like a stitch is a stitch is a stitch, no?
I am not licensed to do it. I have done it with people, and I would trust a veterinarian over 95% of all human doctors with my life, 100%. Because the reality is most human doctors, they do one thing, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they're if they're a surgeon, they're a good surgeon. But don't ask them to diagnose, a urinary tract infection or, look at your blood work and to see what your cholesterol is like. But veterinarians have to do all that stuff. My father's had all kinds of heart issues. My mom's had health issues. And they send me their reports and I talk to their doctors and basically translate from medical jargon into, for my dad's case, accountant jargon. Veterinarians, there was a great article years ago when, The Walking Dead was big and popular, and the Ontario Vet Medical Association did a list of the top 10 reasons you would like a veterinarian on your team during the zombie apocalypse, because there was that one guy, Herschel, who was a retired veterinarian. And they went in and talked about, we're natural leaders, and we're able to handle things under stress, and we can keep the food animals healthy. But it was also, if you have a medical emergency, 95% of the time, the veterinarian's better than your run-of-the-mill human doctor.
Two things there. One, the Vet Association sounds like they have a good sense of humor. And two, not only do you do a little bit of everything, you do a little bit of everything across widely different species. So you know what a pancreas looks like in 100 different animals, if they have pancreases, I don't know.
Yeah, everything but the birds, but the mammals too, sure.
The birds.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. And I mean, as you know, I've been doing some wildlife volunteer work the last 6 years. And I sort of retaught myself after it's been 26 years of university. So after 20 years of university, how to fix birds' broken wings and do emergency surgery on deer. And I basically be able to look at the bird and say, okay, well, this is a cat. This is what I would do. And what I understand of comparative anatomy, I can just kind of switch things up. I can wing it. Wah, wah. And a human is just a hairless dog, really, that's less likely to bite and maybe more likely to hump you, but depending on the animal.
Less likely to bite, more likely to sue. I've seen you do work on birds because I've seen a documentary that you have done, which we'll get to in, 10, 15 minutes. I've also seen your daughter give mouth to mouth to a bird, which was deeply upsetting, but I'm glad the bird survived.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about your work on animals, because when I sent you an email to book you on the show, you're like, what the hell are we going to talk about? And then you told me that you had just the story about some work that you did on a raccoon. I want to talk about this raccoon. Let's set the stage before we talk about what you did to help this raccoon. Tell me about the raccoon. How did the raccoon come to your, possession or into your office? Tell me all about it.
So with this wildlife place that I volunteer at once a week, they have various foster homes. And this one friend of ours, they've become friends. They are the raccoon fosters. They've got a couple of raccoons that live with them that have special needs, so can't be released. And those raccoons act as surrogate parents for the newborn raccoons that are orphaned. newborn raccoons do better when they have a mama raccoon to cuddle up with. They nurse better, things like that, right? They put on weight better. And one of these raccoons, well, basically I had to circumcise them, which for a goy like me is a tricky thing. I watched Fiddler on the Roof. I figured I was in the right zone. And so the issue with this raccoon, and he was a couple of years old. He obviously lived with these guys, and he could not be released due to these special needs that he had. One of his special needs, air quotes, is that he either had a small penis or a large sheath, penile sheath, kind of like the foreskin.
Okay. So wait, it was a couple of years in? You're not going to get your honorary veterinarian Moyle certification because it has to happen at 10 days, the bris.
No, I'm sorry. Well, you know what? Raccoons age differently than us, so I think I'm still okay.
Good. All right. So, rabbi approved surgery.
Yeah. So he was repeatedly getting these nasty penile infections and these tissue infections, and even the little hole, the urethra, was closing up, and he was causing these major problems. He was getting these fistulas, basically, and so finally. Again, I just watched Fiddler on the Roof, and I decided we got to take a little nip off the tip.
Nip off the tip. Fistula, I hardly knew you. Okay, please keep going. Please go. I had to.
There you go. Wrecked him, darn near killed him. And yeah, I basically shortened the sheath because apparently he did have a small penis, and it worked. I couldn't believe it. I mean, halfway through, the family's there, these caregivers, and of course, they're joking, saying, "You've never done this before, have you?" And I'm like, not only have I never done this before, I don't think anyone in the history of the world has done this, because I would have heard it. And so, yeah, I think, forget about being the dog whisperer, I am the raccoon circumciser.
Well, there are rare cases in humans. Maybe the foreskin's too tight. I actually don't know the medical reasons, but I know there's rare cases where babies, even if the family wasn't planning on doing it, need circumcision for medical purposes. So it would stand to reason that animals can be rarely in the same boat.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I figured. And you know, I joke that it's a lot easier taking things apart than it is putting things back together. You know, like amputating is easier than trying to repair a shattered bone, let's say. And so I just did that. I just took something apart instead of trying to stitch it back together. And I don't know. He seems fine.
So after healing up Rocky Raccoon, Freedy the Raccoon, I don't know. I'm not a Beatles fan. Rocky the Raccoon can now pee. He won't get fistulas. He's in good shape.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his name's Abraham, but yes, he's doing great.
My big grandfather's name, although I've recently run this by my dad and he says it wasn't true, but I remember my grandfather saying it to me. Regardless, it's a fun story whether it's true or not. My grandfather's name when he was born before World War II was Adolf, and before he died in the 40s, you can imagine, he changed his name to Abraham. I do wonder if this raccoon's name was Adolf and it's now Abraham.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's all German to me. I couldn't understand what he was saying. So
a heartwarming story that runs through the trail of disgustingness and inappropriate jokes. Honestly, exactly my kind of story. And thank you for sharing it.
My pleasure. It worked out very well.
You also have a documentary, which I alluded to but minutes ago. When we come back, we're going to hear about it because I saw the premiere of it, or maybe not the premiere, but I saw a screening of it in New York and I loved it. And I want to talk to you about it and tell people about it. So I'm here with Dr. Cliff Redford. He's a veterinarian. Stay with us. I will be back with him. We are back with Dr. Cliff Redford. He is a veterinarian, doctor, whatever. You get to call yourself a doctor, though, because you're Dr. Cliff, right? I mean, you can say a doctor.
Yes, I have a medical doctor license, doctor of veterinary medicine. I not only can call myself a doctor, but I can write prescriptions that you can take for your cat to Shoppers Drug Mart.
Yeah, my kitty's prescribed gabapentin, and so am I as a mood stabilizer sleep agent. And I give it to my kitty before he goes to the vet because he gets neurotic when you take him out of the house. He's a creature of habit.
Yeah. In fact, I had years ago, my sons are now 25. So when they were early teens, one of them needed to have his wisdom teeth out. And then the doctor prescribed Tylenol 3, which contains codeine, which is a controllable substance. And they sent the prescription into the local pharmacy, who was taking a long time. And they said, I can just send you to the pharmacy closer to your house. I was like, I don't think you can do that. Like, this is a controlled substance. You're not allowed to. Yeah, we can do it. So I was like, all right. So I went to that pharmacy by the house and we're waiting. And she basically says, I'm sorry, we can't do this. You got to go back. And I was pissed. I was annoyed. My kid was in pain. I was annoyed. And I finally said, you know what? We don't need it. I'm just going to write a prescription for my dog. My dog needs Tylenol 3. And I said, I'm a veterinarian. She said, show me your license. I showed your license. And she's kind of rolling her eyes. She's like, all right. And I said, can I borrow like a prescription pad? She's like, yeah, no problem. And then I said, can I see my son's prescription again? Because I didn't know the dosaging. And so I ended up writing my son a prescription, but I put it under my dog's name, Snuggles Redford. So he ended up taking meds for Snuggles Redford, and he did great.
Should you be admitting this?
No, I mean, yeah, it's too late.
I mean,
I don't care.
I guess he was, I mean, the route of getting it may be dubious at best, but it's not like you gave someone who was not prescribed the drug, you know?
I'll take my chances. They knew exactly what I was doing. And as long as I wrote a prescription for my dog, they were fine. When my clients find out that we occasionally prescribe sildenafil, which is Viagra, for our patients, they ask if we can write Viagra prescriptions for their dog, knowing that they're going to take it themselves.
Wait. Why would pets need Viagra?
There you go. Good question. So Viagra was originally tested as a heart medication to help lower blood pressure, to cause vasodilation or opening up of the blood vessels. And it didn't have enough effect, or it obviously had a different effect. So as soon as they realized it had this different effect in people and caused or helped with erectile dysfunction, they realized we can make a lot more money on this anyways than we can on some heart drug. But in dogs and cats, it does not cause erectile abnormalities because of the muscle and the vessels within the penis. And the dog and the cat are different. So they don't react to the Viagra. They don't dilate. But I have a few dogs with heart problems that have thoracic hypertension. So hypertension specifically in the chest cavity. And as a prescription, they get sildenafil. And one of the owners is this sweet little old lady. And she calls me up every once in a while and says, Dr. Redford, they're laughing at me again at Shoppers Drug Mart. Can you please tell them that this isn't for me or my husband and this is for my dog? So I don't know what to do. It says you shouldn't have named your dog Stevie. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. So, but yeah, the true story. All that is a true story. We prescribe Viagra for our dogs and maybe myself.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, maybe for just yourself. Maybe you just made this whole thing up. Who knows?
Maybe.
That's wild. Are there any other bizarre medications or things that we give animals, which if we were to give them to humans would be hilarious, but for animals, they have a completely different use?
Like I once, back in the day, we used to prescribe pseudoephedrine for dogs when they had urinary abnormalities, because the pseudoephedrine would stimulate the ladder sphincter muscle, again, slightly different than the human. And I once had another little old lady who called me up and said, I accidentally took Duchess's medication, the pee medication. I was like, you took the ephedrine. She's like, yeah. And I said, that's a big problem. Like, this is going to give you too much energy. Do you have heart problems? She's like, yeah, I'm on heart medication. I was like, you need to call your doctor. She didn't call her doctor. So of course I documented it. And I was like, you need to like relax, because this is going to wire you out like crazy. You basically took a bunch of stimulants. And I called her the next day to see how she was doing. And she said, oh, I didn't call my doctor. And I don't know what you're telling me about relaxing. I felt great. I cleaned my entire house. I reorganized my books. Like, I felt amazing. And I won't take it again. But boy, that stuff is incredible. So
it's like when nerds snort a bunch of cocaine. All they want to do is their math homework, you know. But
that's right.
Pseudoephedrine, it's an over-the-counter drug, maybe? Or it's maybe one of the ingredients in in cold medication, but it's also one of the precursors or one of the drugs you need to create methamphetamine. And so it's
100%, yeah.
In the US, it's bizarrely regulated. If you go to the drugstore and buy cold medication, you have to get it over the counter and you have to show them your driver's license, which they then put in the system to make sure you're not buying more than one pack a day or whatever.
Yeah, and here it's not regulated like that, but it's not out in the open. Like, although it is over the counter, you have to ask. It's like behind the counter, but over the counter without a prescription. But you have to ask for it. This way you can't ask for 25 of them. You can't grab a bunch. You can just get one. And I guess if you're tweaking and like scratching yourself too much, then they know maybe this guy doesn't need pseudoephedrine. Maybe he needs Valium instead.
Or chamomile lotion. Or
chamomile lotion.
Chamomile.
Chamomile.
Okay, let's talk about your documentary, Dr. Cliff, Worldwide Vet. You are the vet to the world. Mm-hmm. And I saw it. I saw a screening of it in New York with you. It was I loved it. Your daughter performs mouth to mouth on a ill bird, which I thought was wild. Everyone in the audience thought was wild. You got a question about it being like, aren't you worried about rabies? That question was for my girlfriend. And your daughter had a wonderful answer. She said, look, I don't want a bird to die. Okay. If the bird needs mouth to mouth, the last thing that's going through my head is, oh, I might catch something. I want to save the bird, which I thought was a great answer because it kind of contextualizes your daughter and in a way kind of contextualizes you. You guys care a lot about animals.
Yeah. And the reality is she has had her rabies vaccine, but what she didn't know because she's not a veterinarian is birds cannot get rabies.
So you claim.
There you go. No, they can't.
In
28 days later, they could spread the rage virus, a very underrated Cillian Murphy movie. But classic rabies, birds cannot get it.
All right, avian bird flu, whatever. Okay, I saw the documentary. You have maybe sold the documentary to an outlet or two. You're trying to turn it into a TV show. You want to tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I've been chasing this docu-series, basically an adventure travel veterinarian animal rescue TV show idea for a decade. And it wasn't working out. We were getting chances to pitch and people loved it, but never enough to commission a show. So I said, screw it, I'm going to make my own film. And not only did we make a documentary, which also works as a pilot episode, but we took it to film festivals. And the one you went to, we won Best TV Pilot Award. And it's working. We have now sold the film as a standalone to a couple of outlets. One of them is Al Jazeera. So they're going to be showing it for 3 years exclusive in the Middle East, starting in a few months. But on top of that, there are broadcasters that have seen the film and have basically said, wow, this would make a really good TV show. This guy proves that him and his daughter are good in front of the camera and it's really heartfelt and well shot. So we're looking to start pitching this idea formally.
I think you'd be great as a vet on a reality series, especially the dynamic between you and your daughter. Can I talk about the ending? Can I spoil the ending for folks with the monkey, the baboon, whatever? Or would you prefer I not?
Yeah.
So at the end, you're in India and you happen upon, was it a monkey or a baboon?
It was a monkey.
A monkey that
it was a rhesus monkey
that had been electrocuted, I guess, hanging out by a transformer, maybe power lines. It was in bad shape. And when you got there, unfortunately, the monkey passed. So your goal sort of was, and you succeeded in the goal, to just make the animal as comfortable as possible as it passed, which was a touching scene, like tear-jerking. Yeah. But then at the end, you show your arm. There's this question that arises. I don't think anyone ever says it, but it's like, did this monkey, this animal that's our not so distant cousin, did it die in vain? And so in the end, you show your arm and the movie ends. But your arm has a tattoo of the monkey, and it's so wonderful that you memorialize this death, this very sad moment, so that it sort of gives meaning to the death. But you don't have a voiceover that explains what the tattoo is, and it wasn't clear to me what the tattoo was. Can you please change the ending to have a voiceover?
You know what? We'll put that in when we sell it. We'll add that to the pilot. It will become a thing that if we do have a docuseries, that I'll be getting more tattoos in these different places I go. I have this turtle tattoo, which is one I did work in Panama with a turtle rescue. When I went to Ukraine during the war, I worked with a military unit in Kharkiv. And as they would bring us injured animals that had been injured from bombings and whatnot. So I have the military unit tattoo on my arm and then this monkey. So yeah, you're right. I need to, some people thought I'd been injured. That scene, because it's while the credits are running and there's blood, right? Because you get blood when you're getting a tattoo. Someone had thought I'd been injured. And that was what the blood was from. But yeah, so you're right. We got to do a better job at explaining that. But maybe it's our little secret. Now you and I know, and no one else knows.
It's a fantastic short. Can people, or it's not really a short, it's about an hour. Can people find it online, or what's the best way for folks to find out?
Not yet, because we wanna wait until it's picked up by a streaming service, you know, or a channel. So no, they can't. I mean, you got to see it, and I would send you the link, but I'd ask you not to share it with anyone except for your friends.
Okay, well, our vast listenership in the Middle East is going to check it out on one of Al Jazeera's outlets. It's called Dr. Cliff Worldwide Vet. It is fantastic. I've seen a lot of short films. I saw my friend who also put his short film in a short film festival, NYC Docs. I won't comment on my friend's film, but the block of shorts that I saw it with, all garbage. You know, yours really does stand out.
Yeah, it's it was well shot. Diego, the director, producer, slash writer, and then the film crew that we hired, which were from India and some friends of mine that I'd met years ago. They filmed the crap out of it, man. It was unbelievable. They did such a good job, and it was nice just being able to focus on being a veterinarian and interacting with the animals and my daughter and having a good time.
Cliff, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, man.
Coming up in just a moment, a New York-based relationship expert who's got something to say about whether you should sit next to your partner in bed quietly while you're both on the phones. Should you do it? The answer may surprise you. God, that sounds like clickbait. It's only going to surprise you if you think you should do it. Tracy Ross coming up next. And we are here with Tracy Ross, a New York-based counselor with a nationwide practice. She helps couples, families. She is a relationship expert. Tracy, first of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm really excited because I have long been an advocate for something that I recently read that you are an advocate for, but for different reasons. I think you should plug your phone in away from the bed in the other room. And I've always done it for sleep hygiene. Because when it's there, I reach for it, the blue light, it keeps me up. Even just knowing there could be notifications, I grab it, I know it's there. I can't sleep even if I'm not on it. And so I gotta just get it out of the room. When I brush my teeth, I plug my phone in the living room, and then I retire to bed. My girlfriend, however, is on her phone at night, and it may not be a good idea. Do you want to tell me why?
Yeah, I would love to tell you why. So I am a couples therapist, so couples come to me when they're in distress, right? Like, let's just get that out of the way. And a big complaint is no time to connect. They've lost their connection. They've lost their intimacy. They're not having enough sex. They're fighting too much. And when we try to kind of unpack that and go for the practical side, The number one answer is, well, we don't have time. We have no time to connect. We used to when we were dating, but now there's work, there's kids, there's families, there's events. And, you know, what I try to help people understand is that it doesn't take a lot of time. A little can go a long way. And if you're getting into bed at night and you're both on your phones and not interacting, like when all the rest of the noise of your life has gone away for the moment and you have your time to chill out and that's what you're doing, it's a missed opportunity. It's just a missed opportunity. Sometimes I work with couples, I say, just spend 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes, put your phones down and just talk, just ask each other how your day was. I mean, if you want to do more, great. If not, just see what that's like. And you know what? The answers are, it makes a difference. So I see this as a real missed opportunity at the lowest level, right?
Got it. So you're laying in bed, you're both on the phones. This is not a behavior that actually connects one another. It's a behavior that maybe isolates one another, even though you're next to each other.
I mean, at best, it's neutral, right? At best, it's neutral. And at worst, it's just another way to avoid tension in your relationship, things you don't want to talk about, just stuff, right? It just helps you just avoid. And I mean, a lot of times it's one person complains about the other. He's always on his phone. She's always on her phone. Or it's both of them taking responsibility. And then you're in that conversation. I mean, I just really try to go for the low-hanging fruit sometimes when couples are in distress. You know, there's always deeper stuff. And there's a lot we get into in therapy and that comes up for couples. But if you can just put your phone down. I mean, it's really simple. And you know, we know our phone, the stuff we're looking at is designed to keep us engaged.
It is.
It is, right? It's hard. I mean, I do it. It's not like anyone's immune to it, but there's such power in, you know, just tuning into your partner for a few minutes every day. More time is better, but there's such power in, like, you know, when you're talking to someone and they're distracted and they're not really with you, you know, it doesn't feel the same. You know, I also hear these answers. Well, I asked you about your day. I know what happened. Or, you know, that's when someone's really there with you, they're present. That just takes care of so much. I mean, trust me, it does.
So it does. There's two things I want to touch upon. You say couples come to you, they say there's never any time. There's events, there's children, there's things to do. I think that may be true for a very small percentage of people, but others, I think it's a bit disingenuous. I think it's more about they're not making the time. They're choosing to spend their time on other things. Now, there may be diapers to change. You should probably choose to spend your time on that. But if you're in bed and you're on your phone, you're not choosing to spend time with each other. So in many cases, I don't buy that. Do you find that as well when people say there's not enough time? It's more about making time?
Definitely, definitely. There's choices. We all make choices, right? Whenever we say we're too busy for something, there are times when we have choices. And so, listen, sometimes it's a way to avoid, right? Real stuff happens in relationships, that things that may be hard to resolve, maybe hard to talk about, maybe just hard to admit to yourselves. So the phone is a great device for avoiding that, right? Yeah. It's not just about the time. It's like, yeah, so laughing.
I'm thinking if the goal is to not address the trouble that you have in your relationship, the phone's actually a great idea.
Great idea. Great idea. Yeah, no, it's a great idea. You know, and listen, people have things come up around sex and intimacy and all that stuff. Great way to avoid that, right? Like, I'm reading, oh my God, I'm locked into my phone. It's a great way to avoid that. I mean, listen, you can, if you just want to unwind and you're looking at the phone together or you're talking or you're interacting, okay, that's a little different, right? But the just get in bed on the phone. I mean, I talk to couples who are so frustrated, like they're lying there next to that person. They want some time and attention, something, and they can't get that. They can't get it. Really, it erodes, you know, it kind of takes, it's like, it's sad.
Yeah.
It's to be sad.
So there is actually, like you're saying, a shortcut or a hack or a way to get around this. If you have to be on your phone, if you don't want to be isolated from your partner, do it together. Look at the article together. Look at the stupid cat videos together, whatever it is. If you feel you need to be scrolling, scroll with your partner. Is that the advice?
Share something. Or just like, okay, you know what? Let's set a timer and we're going to put the phones down for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. There is a hack. Like, just look at it together. Or look at some stuff together. Or just don't do it every night.
Yeah.
2 nights a week. You know, I mean, in this age of people being so locked into their phones, we forget that there's something in the middle of all or nothing, right? I mean, I'm a realist. I know people aren't going to just toss their phones.
One strategy that I like to do with my girlfriend is not only do we spend one night, date night together at least a week, we spend one night apart. We call it singles night. She's on her side of the apartment watching whatever TV she wants to watch, reading her book, who knows what she's doing. And I'm on my computer doing my nerdy stuff. And so it just as important as it is to make the time, the quality time spent together. Sometimes if you feel like you don't have enough time for you, you got to make time for you as well.
You know, yeah. You know what I like about what you just said? Like there's intention behind that, right? It's not just like, let's see what comes at us and hope it works for our relationship. Like there's thought and intentionality behind, like it's paying to your attention to your relationship in a particular way. Like, we need time apart, we need time together. Let's make sure that we have both of those. I really like that.
Can't take credit for it. I'm an idiot. It was her idea.
Well, she gets credit. Yeah.
So when you've recommended to couples to put down the phone, to spend that time in the bed together, talking, whatever, what sort of results are you seeing?
Less tension, less fighting about little things. Like, you know, in a relationship where there are these things that come up that can either result in a big argument or like kind of nothing, like choice points, right? There are choice points that more of those moments that could go either way are going the better way. It's like more goodwill, more feeling more seen by each other, feeling more connected, feeling more like less anger and tension. I'm thinking of one couple who literally did 5 or 10 minutes every night, and the tension went out of the relationship. And then, not that there wasn't other stuff to deal with and deeper stuff to deal with, but that kind of allowed them to do that. If you always just have to put out the fires, you can't get to the stuff you may be avoiding.
I got it. So the big takeaway is put the phone down. And when you talk about feeling seen, I'm getting acid flashbacks to the fights I used to get in with my ex-wife, but I guess she's my ex-wife for a reason.
Yeah.
Tracy, thank you so much for going over this article with me. It's really interesting.
You're so welcome. Great to talk to you.
And maybe I can convince my girlfriend to put the phone down. And it's not a complaint on not spending quality time together, because we do that. It's just a complaint about blue light. So I feel like it's good for sleep hygiene. It's good for your relationship. Get the phone away from the bed. That's my advice.
Awesome.
Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Tracy Ross, she's a New York-based counselor with a nationwide practice. She helps couples, families, and she's a relationship expert. That's our show. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow I'll be back with more of whatever this is. And if you have an idea of what this is, just let me know, because seriously, I have no idea what this show is. But as always, thanks for tuning in. Nah.